There are certainly times when, as a podcast host, you realize that you have to be pressing the record button. My guest today, G. Ranasinghe, is we're working with G here in this conversation. In the preamble, prior to pressing the record button, we've realized on about three occasions so far, we must press record. This is one of those conversations I think that you are going to be enjoying, because we're going to be talking about what marketing is not. Now, most people will be talking about what marketing is and giving you a whole host of things that you can do. We're going to actually turn things on its head in this conversation, I am expecting. So welcome yet again, G, to the conversation.
Thanks very much, Neil. It's great to be here. I'm delighted to be invited.
Yeah, when we kind of connected, first of all, I think we had that kind of serendipitous moment where it was like, here we go. Here's somebody who can actually resonate with, because they're saying and sharing a lot of the same things as me. So I think my marketing style is what you might term unconventional, and I know yours is too. I think you've even been quoted as being polarizing. I think that was a word that has been used.
Yeah, that's one of the more sort of politically correct terms to describe me, yes. Full of shit is another one, but you know, sorry, I don't know. Can we swear on the podcast?
You can be yourself, G. You can be
okay.
Yourself.
I wasn't sure because I've misstepped before, so I normally check these things in advance. I don't say it for shock value, to be honest, Neil. But sometimes a good curse word just doesn't have an equal, does it? You know,
we're going to find out in the marketing sense whether that is a necessity now in the current kind of marketing climate that we find ourselves in.
Never trust a marketer who doesn't swear. That's what I'll say.
Oh, now there's an interesting one, because you won't see too much profanity coming from me. So we might have to go there too, G. I think that's going to be an interesting
one. Yeah, but maybe you're just the consummate professional, Neil, and you just have that buffer zone. And I just don't. So it's just like brain to mouth. And there's no middleman, right?
Yes, you know, yes. My wife often will say that. You know? Yeah. Yes, I have been challenged with that at times. Yeah, kind of say what's going on in your head. See, the problem I've got here is that I'm an introvert, a really, really off the end of the spectrum introvert. So a lot of what I do in my marketing is kind of inside, it's internal. And it's only a few things actually make it out into the big wide world, okay, because I've processed it, I've done it, I've been there, I've shared it, I've thought it, I've explored it, I've executed it, but it's all internal. So maybe that is the reason why very little actually comes out of my mouth. But what does come out hopefully does make a little bit of sense, but we'll see. What kind of marketer are you?
What kind of marketer am I? I'm a marketer who doesn't suffer fools gladly. That's with talking with peers, as well as talking with clients. When we started our agency 16 years ago, at that time there were three of us. There's 19 of us now, but at that time there were three of us. And one of the golden rules, the foundational pillars that we set in stone when we formed the agency, was that we were going to refuse to work with arseholes. We had an arsehole-free policy. And that was because throughout our erstwhile working lives, we had always worked with those types of people, either as peers, as managers, or even as, you know, company owners. And so our agency, for the new customer onboarding process, is deliberately quite difficult. We don't want arseholes. We don't want to work with arseholes. That's from suppliers and that's with clients. We turn down around 70% of the inquiries we get, which is a shock to my accountant and is even bigger shock to my bank manager. But, you know, they don't have to work with these people all day, every day. And I do. And since we're, you know, in all intents and purposes, a small agency, we want to work with business owners, senior managers who get what we're about and who we get what they're about, so that we can affect as big a change as we can, to give as big a bang for their buck as we can. And if we're constantly fighting or not being listened to or being questioned about things which, you know, certainly, you know, client education, expectation management is obviously part of any particular engagement. But if we're always being questioned, second-guessed, and our advice is being ignored, then there's a certain amount of, you know, buying a dog and barking yourself sort of thing going on, in which case, why are we doing this? It's going to be, we're going to be far more effectual working with an organization, a client that is more receptive, that wants to work with us and doesn't expect us to work for them, but work with them as a true partnership to deliver on the business result that they're looking to achieve. So what kind of a marketer am I? We're primarily coming at the client problem from a strategic standpoint. So we're not a marketing agency that leads with tactical execution. And I would advise any small business owner to steer well clear. If they're interviewing a marketing agency and the first thing out of their mouth is Facebook ads and SEO and podcasts and goodness knows whatever else, I would strongly advise the business owner in question to run very fast in the opposite direction, because clearly these guys haven't got a clue what they're doing, and they're trying to follow some kind of recipe that they've seen or developed for another client, and they're trying to shoehorn it into the organization that's in front of them at this particular time. So we lead from a strategic standpoint, because at the end of the day, what we're trying to do, what any marketing agency is trying to do, is affect a business result. And if you can't eloquently describe your marketing plan in terms of a business result, then you do not understand business. And if you do not understand business, you cannot possibly begin to comprehend how the marketing aspect of your responsibilities segues within the overall business plan.
Do you think we kind of lost the definition then of marketing? I mean, you and I are of a certain era, should we say, of marketing, when we grew up, sort of, you know, in the early days, and kind of found marketing, or marketing found us, who knows which way around that was.
In the days when there were only three TV channels, is that what you're saying, Neil?
Yes, and they used to finish at a certain time in the day.
They played the national anthem, if you were
They did. I did. I was very young at that point, but I do remember it. Right. Back in those days, there was a very clear definition of marketing. Do you feel we've kind of lost it, and marketing is now, oh, those are the people who post for us on social media?
There is a total breakdown in terms of what marketing is and isn't as a primary business function within an organization. And there are two reasons. Well, there are at least two reasons for that. And the reason why what marketing has become is not anywhere near what marketing is, I think, primarily driven by people or agencies who call themselves digital marketers. Now, this is not knocking digital marketing as a concept. I'm not some Luddite. I don't want to go back to the days of, I don't know, cathode ray tubes and horse and carts or something. That's not what I'm talking about. To illustrate it, one way of illustrating it is the way we describe our own agency. Okay, so when I explain to an organization who we are, and I'm saying that we're a marketing agency, they quite often come back and say that, oh, so you're a digital marketing agency. And I push back on that idea because I don't see us as being a digital marketing agency. Not that we don't do digital tactical execution, but that using the word digital today in 2024 is superfluous because everything is digital, right? TV is digital, billboards are digital, print is digital. But more than that, I think by categorizing an agency as being digital does a disservice to its work and its outlook, because it's nonsensical. You know, to talk about a digital agency, you might as well say, well, you know, we're an electrical agency. You know, of course we use electricity, but should that be what defines us? And I say it shouldn't. What I say is that digital marketing, it's not about looking at marketing as being digital. It's about looking at marketing in a digital world, right? And those two positions are very different, and they're not interchangeable. And I think also it puts the emphasis on the wrong thing, because we're a marketing agency that uses the most appropriate channels of communication to address a target audience group. Now, if we're considering ourselves as a digital agency, you know, you might as well go back to quoting web URLs with www on there, right? It's a given. You see what I mean? What is the point in explaining it in that way? You know, digital isn't a noun. Digital is a channel, one of many. So by saying you're a digital marketer or a digital agency, have you heard of Maslow's hammer, the law of the instrument?
No.
It basically means if all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail, right? So okay. It's if you go to a Facebook marketing agency and say, I need help in growing my top line revenue, obviously they're going to start suggesting Facebook ads because that's what they do, right? If you go to a web designer and you say, I'm not getting enough traffic, they're going to say, well, you need a new website, because they're a web design agency. That's what they do. But especially for websites, with a few notable exceptions, and I think we've all seen those ones, most of the time, you don't actually need a new website. What you need is new copy. But nobody wants to think about the copy. They just want to think about nice design, flashing lights, car crashes, explosions, and all sorts of like good stuff, right? But the actual messaging, the segmentation, the targeting, the messaging, the basics of what I call marketing with an uppercase M is being ignored, because that's the hard stuff. And we'd much rather get bogged down in what typeface should we use? What's our color palette going to be? Notice I said typeface, not font. Because that's another soapbox subject of mine, which we won't go down the road. It's 99 times out of 100, when you're talking about font, you actually mean typeface. But we'll ignore that for a second. But you see, you're using up your time to get caught up in the mechanics of the execution, rather than what actually motivates a person to take action, which is an emotion. It's a behavioral characteristic, which is hard, which is tough, but nobody wants to go there. They want to get caught up with, you know, minutiae, boring stuff.
Mm.
So this is a long and convoluted way to say that I'm a strategist at heart. Now, does that mean that we don't get involved in the icky tactical stuff? Not at all. We have to. Because, you know, while we tried to partner with, you know, tacticians who could implement our strategy in certain ways and craft them optimally from the client, we quickly ran up against brick walls, because obviously if you separate these things, you know, it's too many cooks in the kitchen. So we had to take all of that on board. And so now we do all of that in-house. But we come at it primarily from a strategy point of view. And that is because that's the reason why businesses are doing marketing. They're not doing it so they have a nice looking website or to, you know, post on social or have a huge following on their podcast downloads. To be honest, businesses don't give a shit about any of that stuff. The reason why they're in business is to sell more shit. That's it. And as marketers, our job is to sell more stuff. That's it. Our job is not to grow audiences. Our job is not to grow likes, comments, forwards, downloads, gated ebook downloads, any of that crap. Our job is to sell. We are salespeople. And the tactics that we use to sell are different from, let's call them salespeople with an uppercase S. But primarily, if it doesn't sell, it's not marketing. It's fluff. It's noise. It's not signal. You know, businesses don't get into marketing just to sort of piss money down the drain, right? There has to be some kind of direct or indirect relationship between marketing investment and revenue. And if there isn't, and if the marketing person or agency that you're working with doesn't have a clear attributed a straight line between effort and revenue and take ownership of that, then what are they actually doing? They're not doing marketing. They're doing promotions. They're doing comms. Now, that's not to say promotions and comms aren't important. Of course they are. But that's not marketing. All right? Promotion is a tiny percentage of a tiny percentage of what marketing actually is. You know, we can talk about 4 P's or 5 P's or 10 P's or however many P's, you know, so many P's, it sounds like everybody's got cystitis, right? It doesn't matter how many P's we're talking about. But unless you start looking at the customer experience holistically and mapping backwards at which point that first introduction is between the buyer and your brand, you're not doing your job properly. If you're posting stuff on Instagram saying, oh, look, here's Yvonne, she's wearing a funny hat, isn't that great? What's that? It's nonsense. It's nonsense. Absolutely. It's just adding to the noise and degrading the signal. And as audiences, we've already got enough noise. We don't need any more.
Do you think we've started at the wrong place? I just wonder if, as you know, when somebody comes into the marketing profession, so they're let's call them a junior marketer. They might be, job title might be content creator, it might be marketing assistant, it could be digital marketing assistant. You might put digital in front of it. Well, actually, no, there's the point, because if we do put digital in front of it, it's pigeonholing that person to doing a very specific single probably element. And what does that person do as they grow and flourish in their career? They start to add, hopefully, more skills, more abilities, work into their preferences, a little bit more kind of all those little nuances. They had a bit of knowledge. There is some hard kind of real life experience there they can add in. But actually, you know, if we go, we started this from the wrong point, because if you're to the point you've made then, which is that if strategy is the most important kind of element of marketing, why don't we flip that on its head? Begin with, okay, if you want to be a marketer, you don't do execution first. As a marketer, you need to understand what's your business about. You need to go and meet some customers. You need to shadow sales. You need to sit with finance because you need to understand actually what the term ROI, return on investment, actually means. We're not going to do any marketing with you yet. You've got to learn all this stuff. Then you can start to look at maybe some channels for communication, but you also need to talk to the product development team because you need to understand how we innovate and how we bring new products and services to market. So the full kind of mix evolves later out of these initial building blocks, but we don't do it that way around, do we? We promote a junior marketer into more and more senior roles in a larger organization. Until then, they're responsible for marketing strategy. Well, hold on a minute. They don't know anything about that because all they've done is the tactical stuff. Have we done it the opposite way around to what it could be?
Everybody's looking for technology to be the cure-all to all of these problems. And so what's happened is that we're looking to see, how does this channel work? How does this technology work? How can we optimize a CRM? How can we optimize email? How does this technology work? How does AI work? How does machine learning work? How does this work? And nobody's actually looking and asking themselves, well, how does a customer work? How do people work? You know, a fundamental part of our jobs is to understand human behavior. You can call it psychology. You can call it behavioral economics, behavioral science. You know, you can give it as grandiose terms as you want. But at the end of the day, marketing is about affecting change. Right, behavioral, usually. And to affect change means, as you just pointed out, understanding the drivers and contextual influences that influence buying behavior. And that has to happen well in advance of you picking up a mouse and start, you know, start opening up a new page in WordPress or clicking new on your Instagram. It's way before any of that. So are we looking at things from the wrong end of the telescope? Quite possibly. And it's our own fault as marketers. Now, that doesn't mean that business owners are absolved of responsibility, not at all. I have a theory, I suppose it's, you can call it a theory, it's certainly a point of view, that marketing is somewhat in a bad place, in a critical place, because ideologically, it's disliked in the higher echelons of business. And as a result, what we have is effective marketing being sidelined in favor of efficient marketing, which we can talk about later on, efficiency versus effectiveness. On the one hand, we have the business owners, managers, HR people are employing marketers based upon a job description that isn't marketing, it's promotion. So what you have is someone who whose idea of marketing is throwing Unsplash images into Canva templates. Right? Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not knocking Unsplash and I'm not knocking Canva. Okay? They have their place and they're great in getting something passable for a non-designer type, right? You get to sort of good enough, whatever good enough means, in a very short space of time, right? Aesthetically. But in terms of messaging and communication and positioning and all of that good stuff, none of that is automated. Just like I could spend, $500, pounds, euro, pick your currency. I could spend $500 on a set of Japanese chef's knives, right? But it doesn't make me Gordon Ramsay, does it? Right? I could buy a $20,000 camera. It doesn't make me Annie Leibovitz. So it's not about the tools, is it? So if it's not about the tools, what's it about? It's about understanding human behavior. It's about understanding how to invoke emotion, positive or negative, to influence a purchasing decision. Usually a purchasing decision, it doesn't have to be, but certainly a decision on the part of the segmented ICP, your ideal customer profile, that you have been tasked to attract. So not only are business owners employing the wrong kinds of people, because when these business owners were further down the corporate ladder themselves, what they saw from marketing as output was what they thought marketing was. Stress balls and tote bags and ordering brochures and designing trade show booths, right? They never saw the nine-tenths that was underneath the waterline. Nor would they. You wouldn't expect them to. It's not part of their job description. But they're now in charge of hiring for marketing. So they think that's what marketing is all about. So that's number one. On the other side of the table, you've got, I call them people who call themselves marketers. Okay? I don't call them marketers because they're not. Right? They have a perception of what marketing is as being promotions, and they think that the only thing they need to do for marketing is get themselves a nice new shiny MacBook Pro and a subscription to Canva or Creative Suite. Then they can spend all their times in Starbucks drinking flat whites and throwing royalty-free images into templates, and job done. Ka-ching. They couldn't spell EBITDA, let alone know what it was. You know what I mean? So from both ends of the spectrum, we're getting into, treacherous waters. And it's worse because of the nature of marketing. Because, you mentioned the Chartered Institute of Marketing earlier on, right? Other august institutions are available, of course. There isn't any compulsion on behalf of employers to insist upon any sort of formal qualification for a marketing person, or an informal qualification. You can have a tertiary qualification. It can be an apprenticeship. There's all sorts of qualification exist in lots of things. There's independent courses that you can go on, run by marketers themselves as well as other institutions. But if you want to be an accountant, if you want to be a CFO, you have to pass exams, right? If you want to fly a plane, you've got to get a pilot's license, right? if you want to be a surgeon, before they'll let you anywhere near a scalpel, you have to spend 7 years at medical school, right? But any idiot can buy a MacBook Pro and call themselves a marketer. So the barrier to entry is far too low. So what you have, in effect, And I don't know if you spent any time on my profile of the the podcast matchmaking application that we're both on, and I refer to them as marketing bros. These people who crouched in front of Lamborghinis and throw gang signs and say, "Look how much money I've made." These are the same people who were talking about pyramid schemes or multi-level marketing or crypto or metaverse or whatever else they think they can, what other bandwagon they can jump on. And it just happens to be marketing at the moment before they go off on something else, right? AI probably. So the object of the exercise really is to find marketers who actually specialize in the human condition first and not jump straight into the tactical execution while what we're doing is the other way around, because the tactical execution is easy. It's like strategy, right? It's the hardest thing to do is to pin people down, business owners, this is CEOs, especially founders, on strategy, because strategy is about what you say no to as much as what you say yes to, right? And business owners, especially entrepreneurial business owners, like, you know, founder owners, they never want to say no to anything. But if you have to, but to be able to stand for something, it means you're saying that you don't stand for something else. And if you're going to have any hope of growing differentiation and distinctiveness, you can't do that if you have a woolly strategy. If it's not clear how your strategy allows you to be differentiated in the category that you play in, then you're gray in a sea of gray, in this sea of sameness, and which is a very dangerous place to be in, especially in B2B, where everybody looks and sounds the same, right? It's a very dangerous place. And you would think that with the numbers that we're talking about in terms of investing in marketing, business owners, senior management would be aware of this and understand the reasons why being differentiated and, if possible, distinctive is so important. But what they'd rather decide to do is what everybody else is doing and blend in, which sort of is counterintuitive, don't you think?
I do. And I think it's an interesting one that you've kind of opened, well, for me, that you've opened up here, is this kind of whole idea when you're talking about, you know, difference between sort of strategy and tactics, and, you know, the fact that others perceiving what marketing does is, could do, could be, comes very at the very, very tactical level. It's our fault, though, isn't it, really? Because if we're a good marketer, let's say, well, even if we're a great marketer, we should really be treating our audience, and this isn't just customers, external customers, but our audience. So it could be our client, it could be our boss, it could be the CFO that you've just described earlier there, treating them as major stakeholders for how we are going to be perceived in our industry, let alone in our job and for our own personal career progression. Feels like it's really important to almost, in that redefinition of who we are and what we do, actually then start to sell ourselves appropriately with the people who matter. So that could be client, that could be boss, could be CEO or whoever. Do you think that will make a difference here?
As marketers, we do a lousy job of marketing ourselves. You know, it's the shoemaker's kids, isn't it? Right? Why is a C-level marketing position's tenure less than 18 months nowadays? Right? Why are there so few marketers at C-suite positions within organizations? Because we're not seen as seeing serious people. We're not serious people, to misquote Logan Roy in Succession on that particular episode, if you know what I'm talking about, if you're a Succession fan, I don't know. But we're not serious people, because marketing 101, know your audience and adapt your communication accordingly. Right? And we are laughed out of the boardroom because we don't talk board. We don't talk the language of business, the language of finance. We go in to these marketing to these board meetings and spout out the marketing jargon and abbreviations that we know and love when we talk about the stuff to each other. But the C-suite haven't got a clue, and they start thinking this is all woo-woo, hippie, Woodstock, tie-dye, you know, let's leave this all to the power of the crystal, right? We don't do ourselves any service whatsoever. We don't talk in language of finance. The thing, everybody else around that table are dealing with business units which are based around sequential logic. Of they're very Newtonian in their approach and in the way that they work. If you look at manufacturing or even to a certain extent R&D, it's very process driven. Even if you look at the number of CEOs who have engineering type backgrounds, or certainly economists who have engineering type backgrounds, they're basing their decisions that they have full information, full utility to be able to make a decision, right? Supposing you're a company that makes widgets, right? Now, if you make a widget, and if you can find ways of optimizing the production process, the raw materials, automation, whatever, to be able to reduce the per unit cost of that widget, then you have increased efficiency of that system, obviously up until the point that the widget's no longer fit for the purpose that it's designed, right? If you use like crap materials or something, right? That's seen as a good thing, and you've created the ultimate efficiencies within that process. But the thing is about marketing is that the targets of our actions are not rational, logical entities. We're dealing with human beings who are anything but rational. Not only that, but the result of their decisions are highly contextual in nature. And you cannot factor in all of those contextual influences in order to make an airtight, watertight system. Because there are not universally recognized units to measure all of the behavioral characteristics which are influencing a buying decision, right? For example, there is no SI unit of fear, of regret, of anger. But these are all influences to making a purchasing decision. Fear is the primary driver of the entire insurance industry, for example, right? So if you can't categorize these things, you're having to rely upon influencing at a behavioral level. And that's the stuff, and it's talking about experimentation, because obviously you have to start looking at segmentation and, you know, demographics and psychographics, and it starts going, you know, piecemeal, like gets very frayed at that end, right? So that sort of non-linear, non-sequential variable output is the stuff that scares finance types to death. Because in the finance world, 2 + 2 is always 4. But in the marketing world, it's not. Not at all. You know, Rory Sutherland often says, the opposite of a good idea is another good, can be another good idea. There's more than one way to get to the destination. It's not just always going to be 2 + 2. And that sort of non-sequential, non-rational thinking is the reason why us as marketers need to create that level of comfort and security and dependability that the boardroom are looking for when we start waving, you know, 6-7 figure marketing budgets under their noses. Otherwise, it's like, really? What? We're going upon what? Full moon? What are we going on? Star signs? You know, what's the segmentation? Left-handed people? How are you doing this? Right? That's what I say. We don't do ourselves any favors at all. But how many marketing courses, exams, talk about finance? You mentioned ROI. An accountant's description, perception of ROI is very, very different to a marketer's. And by quoting what a marketer thinks an ROI is one of the reasons why we're not taken seriously. It's a finance term. And even if we describe ROI in a different way because of efficiency reasons, that doesn't mean that we communicate that to people whose definition of ROI is different to our own. We have to play the game. We have to communicate in the language of our customer. And in this case, it's the finance department or the CEO or the COO or whomever. So we don't do ourselves any favors. So it's our own fault that we're not taken seriously.
I love your honesty, G. I mean, it's, you know, I think we all kind of know it. It's just we all need to hear it. I think this is the thing. I think for those of us who have been doing this stuff for a long, long time, we kind of figured it out. We haven't necessarily got the absolute answer as to, okay, so what do I do next? Maybe we'll come on to that. But I think those kind of new into the industry probably won't even realize this is a thing. But given time, given enough exposure and enough knockbacks, and I think one of the things that often for me comes in loud and clear is when sort of marketing budget is seen as a cost, not an investment. And it comes back to the ROI thing. It's seen as a, oh, how much are we going to spend on marketing this year, either from the agency or from the client side perspective? It's a spend rather than an investment. And if marketers perceive that their budget is an investment, just by definition, they would need to then be showing some kind of return. And the return then is not the number of followers you've got or the number of posts you did on Instagram. That's not what we're talking about, is it? So again, do you feel hopeful that we can do this? Do you feel hopeful we can crack it and that collectively as an industry, client side, marketers and agency side, we can actually come together and work together? Because the word strategy, I've heard agencies and I've had them use it to me, oh, we're a strategic agency. And what they mean by that is actually they're going to give me a monthly report on their tactical activity.
Right.
And it's just painful when you know how much more value they could add because they're seeing other industries. They have got different styles and sizes of clients that they could actually reflect some of their learning back into the organization to help inform it. That to me would be strategy. That would be strategic input. And yet a monthly report, that's not strategy. But do you think collectively, if we had those really raw conversations and were as honest as you've just been there, do you think there is hope?
I don't think we've bottomed out yet, but I think perversely, the growth in AI is going to speed up the reverse, us reversing out of the one-way street that we're in because of the effectiveness efficiency argument, which is what's taken over much of what is called marketing today. And it's a big conversation that's been going on in marketing circles for a while. And it's getting to a point now where people are starting listening to the little boy who's saying that the king's not wearing any clothes. Because if we have all of this programmatic stuff, all of this AI, all of this targeting, pixels, remarketing tags, this, that, and the other, at our disposal, which we've had for a number of years, right? Probably close to a decade, if not more, right? If that's the case, firstly, why is so much marketing communication dog shit? It's a technical term, by the way. Just thought I'd throw that one in. And secondly, why is it not working? Why is the effectiveness, especially of digital advertising, falling? If we have all of these tools which are supposed to be putting it in front of the exact profile of person that we're trying to attract. And the reason is because we're coming at it from an efficiency perspective instead of a effectiveness perspective. So if I can go on about effectiveness versus efficiency, if you will allow me. If we go back to the days when marketing in the old days, the three channel TV days, right? It was like I said before, right? Marketing was primarily about influencing a decision to influence behavior in order to deliver usually a commercial result, right? So as a consequence of that, the best marketers of the day were familiar with concepts such as, you know, human behavior, human insight, psychology, all that sort of stuff. Whereas today, 99% of the marketing that we see as consumers, certainly in digital, is being more concerned with efficiency than effectiveness, as though marketing is like a branch of logistics or something. Okay. So what do I mean by efficiency and effectiveness in the way that I'm describing? Okay. So effectiveness, the way I'm looking at it, is about how well you do something to achieve your goals, how successful you are in delivering on what you set out to do. Okay. Whereas efficiency is a ratio. So efficiency is about how much input you make to deliver a particular output. So to maximize efficiency, it's about reducing input to maintain a certain output. Okay, do you see where I'm going with this? It's not rocket science, is it? Right? So in which case, we get to where we are. Because companies are chasing efficiency metrics, what we end up with is marketing looking and saying the same thing as everybody else. I mean, look at the majority of ads that you see today, digital or otherwise, okay? 10 will get you 5. If you covered up the logo, the exact piece of marketing could be used by pretty much anyone, right? There's no differentiation. Certainly nothing distinctive about it. But by pursuing metrics based around efficiency above all else, it's, as a result, what we're doing is we've exorcised the creativity component out of the equation, right? Because you can't quantify creativity. You can't give it. You can't say, I'll put $27.50 worth of creativity into this ad, right? Because unfortunately, it doesn't work like that, right? So instead of doing the basics of marketing, research, segmentation, positioning, messaging, all that sort of stuff, we've come to the conclusion that bad marketing that's more targeted is better than great marketing that's spread wider, which is the reason why we've got to the place that we are with tracking cookies and remarketing tags and programmatic and all the other stuff. And also, as a consequence, the reason why we have things like GDPR and CCPA and PIPL and CPRA and CDPA and SB 190, if you're in the US, you'll know many of these things. But GDPR, which is still the most severe, right? Why did GDPR come around? Because marketers couldn't be trusted to self-govern themselves. What a surprise, okay? So this is the reason, the fundamental reason why we're going wrong. Even business, what we've got is that the businesses are looking to create a data-driven, repeatable process, but one that's devoid of creativity or salience or resonance, because they can't afford to do it within that per unit cost that they've budgeted for. And then they'll moan to you about why their marketing sucks, right? It's like they're focusing on getting the pizza delivered as fast as possible without realizing that it hasn't been cooked properly and it's got the wrong toppings on it. You see what I mean?
Mm. That's a lovely metaphor. I think that is so clear that, it is one of those things, because we can see that there's value in doing it, though, can't we? So if the message was right, if the pizza toppings were the right toppings, and if the pizza did actually taste delicious, the fact you can get it there quicker is the differentiator. But there's a hierarchy, isn't there?
The differentiator could be that it takes longer. But the
toppings are better.
Right. It could be we don't do 1 hour delivery, we do 2 hour delivery. Now, it may work in your favor because you can, you know, have multiple deliveries, right? Or you can even charge more for it, because you're looking at the quality threshold and then you've got the value perception stuff going on, right? But instead, we're looking to cut budget. But by cutting budget, both in terms of like effort terms as well as like monetary terms, by cutting budget to maximize efficiency, it has the reverse effect on the business. Over the longer term, it means less growth and less market share. But if instead we focus on effectiveness, not only are we maximizing revenue and profit, of course, in the short term, but we're doing other things which are going to positively influence the next wave of efforts that we do. So we're building brand awareness, we're building visibility, we're building reach, we're building engagement, which reduces the cost of new customer acquisition, reduces pricing sensitivity, increases customer loyalty, and strengthens your position against the competition. But we won't do that because the per unit cost is higher. And since everything is working on a quarterly basis, a marketer is expected to deliver an upturn in revenue within a quarter, because the business needs to report back to their shareholders every quarter and show quarter on quarter returns, or at least year on year returns, that are greater than they've gone before, which can't be done because these sorts of things take, you know, in some cases years to implement, which is the reason why the tenure of a C-suite marketer is so short, because they're not given enough time to implement fundamental change within that organization. Because it's not just department, it's an organizational thing.
Why do you think people like you and I stay within the industry? Because this sounds both bleak, but sort of almost too big a challenge to even face. I mean, why do we stay in it? I know what my answer is. What's your answer?
What's your answer? No, Lou, you go first. I've been talking a lot. Tell me, what's your answer?
Because I get very excited by an emerging seismic change. I was marketing before internet, so the first websites came and it was like, oh, this is special, something here. Web 2, social media. Yeah, okay, now we can get into proper engagement. Of course, we've seen how that's played out.
Yeah, because they're around, yeah.
Yeah, but now where we have AI, we have sustainability, stroke purpose, stroke value as a whole different kind of currency, if you like, in terms of how we talk about ourselves and potentially a reinvention of the marketing mix. So those P's that you described, because we have things like purpose and whatever that means in certain sectors, etc. It is that constant visioning of what is possible. It's the possibilities. That's why I'm still here. I'm excited. I'm probably more excited by the emergence of AI and purpose-driven, value-based business than I've been at any point in my career. Feels like I'm starting out, which is really, really quite incredible. 35 years later, I would not have thought that I would be feeling more excited by it than I was right at the start when it was like, oh, there's a shiny new thing to play with. It is more exciting to me now.
I think AI is going to let us down. I think there's lots of people who are jumping up and down and saying what AI will turn into within the marketing category, okay? And I think, firstly, nobody knows the impact it's going to be, right? But my gut feeling is it's not going to be anywhere near as disruptive as the soothsayers stroke demon promoters would have us believe. I think it'll be somewhere in the middle. Now, what it will mean is that the barrier of crapness is moved up. So all of those people who are trying to get your $10 to produce a 500-word blog post are, if they can't write better than AI, they are instantly out of a job, which is good for the industry. It is positive. It is Darwinian. And we need to embrace that. What I hope is that the ultimate extension of where we're going in terms of the effectiveness of technology-driven marketing will see a resurgence in true creative execution, because that is going to be your differentiator. It's going to show in a sea of sameness, how a brand can stand out, right? AI could never write "just do it" for Nike. AI could never have written "I'm loving it" for McDonald's, right? And that AI would have never put, you know, Colin Kaepernick on a billboard for Nike all those years ago. And it's that element to be able to... The next wave of marketing will be psychological, not technological. And I firmly believe that. Because what technology is a leveler, right? You pay your $20 and you've got ChatGPT or, you know, whatever else you've got, right? That set the barriers to entry. But if everybody's got the same thing, there's no advantage anymore, is there? So where is the advantage? It goes back to the quote from Bill Birnbach all those years ago. You know, he said, you know, the last... I'm going to misquote this horribly now that I've set myself up for a fall. You know, the last great competitive advantage that we have is creativity. And Birnbach, basically the founder of modern advertising, he knows a little bit about, who knew a little bit about advertising. And that's what I think is going to be so interesting, to see how the role of automation, AI, which is, you know, we can call it AI, it's software with a bigger programming matrix, that's all it is, right? It's going to be interesting to see where those touch points are within the marketing, quote, manufacturing process, and where it fails to deliver and it's reliant upon the human input based upon marketers knowing what they're doing, as you mentioned, speaking to customers, actually understanding behavioral buying drivers within a category to be able to create that differentiation.
And therein lies, I guess, one, the crystal ball, but two, the opportunity, because we can't just sit and wait, can we? This is the key here. We need to be taking positive, proactive action. Yeah, exploring the technology that's emerging and seeing if there is a part, at least in part, that it can play within our own businesses. But also at the same time, I think there's one, and correct me if I'm wrong here, G, but this, I think, is one consistent mantra, really, that you've been talking about that's gone through as a thread through everything you've said here. It's about really paying attention to the audience, because you've talked about behavior, psychology, influence, doing the research, everything else around this has all been around properly, truly listening to, let's call them customer, but it's not just external customer, it's everybody you serve. Am I right in that? Because it feels like that is at the core of everything here that we're discussing.
It's the customers paying our salary. Everybody's salary. Right? So that's who we need to attract. Beauty is in the eye of the checkbook holder. Right? That's where the, you know, mix the metaphors, that's where the rubber hits the road. You know, if we don't have a clear, intimate knowledge of the behavioral drivers that are underpinning those decision-making elements of our target audience, how can we possibly fathom out ways to attract, educate, inform, entertain, whatever we're doing at the other end? We can't. And it doesn't matter whether it's B2B or B2C, right? You know, there's this fallacy about, oh, yeah, well, it's all very well talking about, B2C. It doesn't work in B2B. Of course it works in B2B. The only difference between B2B and B2C is that you've got more decision makers in the process. That's all. That's it, right? And those decisions are not made logically, right? They will give you this total nonsense about it being neutral and unbiased and feature-based, and it's total nonsense, right? Nobody, you pick any category, nobody does their research and comes up with listing all 476 players within the category and coming up with a matrix to see which one sort of works out this, that, the other. Of course not. It doesn't happen. In most categories, you have, it's usually odd number for some reason. It's a way that the brain works. 3, 5, or 7 top players within a category. And usually those are the choices that a business makes within that purchase. Maybe occasionally there's an outlier because somebody you know says, okay, it's a little bit of a curveball, but you should have a look at this supplier who's right, really good. It's worth having a look at what these guys are doing because they're doing something really cool. But otherwise, everybody sticks with what's going. Why? Because in B2B, you do not buy the best product, service, or solution for your business. What you're buying is risk mitigation, right? It goes back 50 years ago when they said nobody ever got fired for buying IBM. You don't buy the best in the category. You buy what's not going to get you fired if it all goes wrong. Because you're buying with somebody else's money. So what you're buying is not the best. What you're buying is what you perceive as being the least risky. And so if you're a new player within a particular category, you need to look the least risky. If you're starting an accountancy practice and you've never been, you're a newly qualified accountant and you build a website, you're probably not going to use bright pink as a background. Probably. right? Because that creates risk in the minds of your potential customers, unless you're after the Barbie audience or something, I don't know, right? Unless you're doing for a particular reason. Now, you can differentiate in other ways, but there are certain, there's a certain expectation level of the buyer, depending on the category, of how you should look and what you should say and the way that you should say it, inflection, tone of voice, all of that sort of stuff. And you need to play that game to a certain point and then differentiate through whatever particular dimension, measurable dimension that you can use that matters to the customer. You know, it may be service, it may be price, it may be people, it may be whatever, you know, whatever makes most sense. Yeah, I've totally lost track of the question that I'm supposed to answer, but you get my point.
I do. Gee, I want to connect people with you. I mean, we could talk marketing all day, and we probably would and probably will at some point. And I'd love to invite you to come back for, you know, a deeper dive into some of these concepts. And I think particularly for me, it's the behavioral science one. I think that is the one about really understanding, you know, the science behind the behaviors that we've been discussing here, and that risk aversion that businesses have to making decisions, and being part of then the proposition sort of matrix as they're probably looking at there, again, would be another lovely topic to follow up. But in the meantime, if somebody wants to get into conversation with you, have a meeting, connect with you, where can they find you?
The best and easiest place to find me is on LinkedIn. If you just enter my name in LinkedIn. For some reason, there's only one G Ranasinghe in LinkedIn. Isn't that amazing?
Wonderful. There's branding in its
yeah, heart. There you go. So you can find me on LinkedIn. Otherwise, obviously, the website, kexino.com, K-E-X-I-N-O. Or you can just Google me. I'm all over the place. All over you. Wonderful. Like a cheap suit, as they say.
Wonderful. Gee, it's been an absolute pleasure. And I knew, sort of when we first connected, that this was going to be really interesting because, yeah, you are resonating with a lot of the things I've been thinking about and talking about. So, hopefully that's brought a huge amount of value and getting people just to rethink and just to be aware of the role of marketing. And if you're not in marketing, but you've got a marketer who reports to you and indirectly or directly, go and ask them to prove themselves. Go and ask them to redefine actually what it is they do, because listening to G here, it's now time for us all to take that accountability. G, thank you again.
It's very kind of you. Thanks very much for the opportunity.